from His Word. And actually, this morning we'll look into the Old Testament in 1 Kings chapter 10. If you'll be turning there, 1 Kings chapter 10 will be the text that we'll use this morning. Certainly blessed to be here. It's a good day, as every first day of the week is, as we always look forward to coming in this place with the people of God to honor our God and our King. And we are thankful to be able to have that chance today to do that. Have some visitors, so thankful that you've come and grateful for your presence and the encouragement that you are to us in seeking out a place to worship God this morning. My son Will is here, and my daughter-in-law-to-be, Olivia, this morning. I'm thankful to have them visiting with us. I think this may be Will's first time on a Sunday to be with us since his accident last year. And we're just so thankful for the prayers of each one of you during the course of that time and the love that you have shown to us during the course of that period of time. Every parent that experiences something like that, and I'm thinking of Connie today, and I'm thinking of Glenn and Gail, and when you go through that time, it helps so much to have people that love you and care for you and care for your children, and that is such a huge blessing. So thank you for that. Every day with them is a treasure to us, and we're thankful that God has preserved him. Just also want to mention one other thing, and that is Brother Darren is away from us this morning. He spent all of Friday in the hospital. He's having some problems with his gallbladder, it appears, and may have to join the gallbladder club that we have here, as many places do, and have that removed. He's going to see a doctor on Monday. So please keep Darren and family in your thoughts and prayers. In 1 Kings chapter 10, 1 Kings chapter 10 speaks of the height of Israel's prosperity under King Solomon. And this period of time was really the golden age of Israel. It was a period when the kingdom was united. David has prepared for the building of the temple and has won great battles and fought many enemies of Israel. And now Solomon has come to reign, and he has built the temple, and it is a period of great wealth, a period of great opportunity in the country. But that has not happened as a result of Solomon himself. Solomon has appealed to God that God will be at the very center of his kingdom, that his kingdom would be a theocentric kingdom, that God would be at the very heart of everything that they did. And that was the source of his success. And folks, let me tell you, the effects of that, when we put God at the very center of our lives and we make our lives theocentric, then the effects of that are marvelous. And I speak to you from experience. That changes our lives. When we decide that it will not be my wisdom, that I need the wisdom of God, that makes all the difference in the world. Dan, I'm getting a little bit of feedback on this phone. I don't know if maybe we can turn down the volume. I can hear myself through the phone. Thank you. I'm not Darren. I don't know which button to push on that. Thank you, Andrew. So the fame of Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 10 has spread far and wide. But Solomon wants people to understand that it's not him. That his wisdom that he displays is not his wisdom, but that wisdom comes from God. And even though people would be thousands of miles away, they would know somehow that that wisdom was not inherent to Solomon, that it was far deeper than that, and in fact, it was God that provided the things that brought Israel so much prosperity and so much greatness under his rule. And it was important, it appears to Solomon, that everyone would understand the source of what he had. And I think it's important for us that as we work in our day-to-day activities in the world in which we live, that we make sure people understand that it is God that we are connected with, and it's because of him that we have the things that we have. He gave all credit and honor to him. So in Kings chapter 10, 1 Kings chapter 10, a queen comes to Jerusalem is what I would like for us to look at together for a few minutes this morning. 1 Kings chapter 10. In verse 1 of 1 Kings chapter 10, what we find is a queen from very far away, from a place called Sheba, which probably was Ethiopia, has come to see Solomon. And again, as we started out, she recognized that the Lord was at its center. When she came to Jerusalem, she came not to see a man. She came to see the effects upon a man from the God of heaven. And she came seeking to understand what authority it was that would bring about this greatness in Israel. As we read verse 1 of 1 Kings chapter 10, it says here that when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, notice this, concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. Concerning the name of the Lord. Yes, Solomon was famous. Yes, that had gone far and wide to all corners of the earth at that time. But it was about the name of the Lord. That place was what it was because of him. And we understand that in Jerusalem, that was the representative place of God among the Israelites. That temple where he would reside in that place would represent his being with man. And I don't know how much the Queen of Sheba knew about that, but she knew enough 1,000 miles away, more than 1,000 miles away, to desire to come to this place where God was because she had heard about the name of the Lord. And so she comes to Jerusalem. And Solomon made sure that his identity was wrapped up in God. And notice, the name of the Lord was more important than the fame of Solomon. And we see that in that passage and in this context, that the name of the Lord was far more important than his fame. So when she came to Jerusalem, she came more significantly to see what the Lord had done. And the text tells us that she tested Solomon with hard questions. When we're identified with the God of heaven, sometimes we have to field hard questions. Sometimes we have hard questions. But one thing I know is that when she came to Jerusalem with all of these questions in her heart, all of them were answered. That Solomon was able to answer every single one of them. All of those things that she'd been thinking about, all of maybe the doubts that she had, the questions and concerns that she had of life, whatever those were, how things work under the kingdom of heaven, she comes and Solomon answers every single one of those questions. And we see that in verse 3 here, that she comes and asks these questions, and ultimately those questions are answered because of God. It all comes back to him. When she hears those answers in 1 Kings 10 and verse 9, it says that she blessed the Lord. That she understood that that didn't come from him. In verse 9 it says, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you, setting you on the throne of Israel. Because the Lord has loved Israel forever, therefore he made you king, to do justice and righteousness." In all of the successes of Solomon, what was paramount to him and to others was that God would get the glory for who he was. And what he did. And you can't read this section of this queen coming to Jerusalem and miss the fact that the glory comes to God. And he receives honor from that. For us, when we think about heaven, heaven is about the presence of the Lord. It's about the name of the Lord. It's about the authority of God. It's about the fact that he's there. We make this connection in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 26 about Jerusalem. Galatians 4 and verse 26 refers to Jerusalem as the Jerusalem above. Hebrews 12 and verse 22 says the heavenly Jerusalem. Revelation 21 and verse 2 speaks of the holy city, the new Jerusalem. And this physical Jerusalem was always representative of a spiritual place. And when we read about physical Jerusalem and we see physical Jerusalem, we always think of that greater parallel to heaven. Folks, the chief reason that you want to go to heaven is because God is there. The chief reason that the Queen of Sheba came to Jerusalem was because God was there. She understood that it was His effect. Someone in a lesson that I heard some time back said about this, he said, the person who talks about the streets of gold and the pearly gates to the exclusion of Jesus is like a young bride who goes on and on about the fine china and her dress and the pretty flowers and the house she will soon move into without saying a single word about the bridegroom. It's about God. It's about the presence of God. And there's so many things that are connected with that are wonderful. But principally, it is about being where He is. And all of those other things that are connected with that are just accoutrements. It's just dressing that goes along with the fact that He is there. Let's look at something else here in 1 Kings chapter 10, and that is that she observed unparalleled wisdom. When she came to Jerusalem, she came and she experienced there unparalleled wisdom. Verse 2 says, she came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, with camels that bore spices, with much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for the king that he could not explain it to her. And of course, that again was as a result of God giving him that wisdom to answer those questions. So ultimately, that wisdom and those answers are from God. But she comes, and verse 2, she pours out her heart. All of the things that she wondered about, all of the things that she didn't know, now she comes before God, and all of those questions are answered. And I just have it in my mind. I have so many questions. I have so many things I don't understand. There are things I don't know, and things that I'm not sure about, and things I don't know why God does it the way that He does it. And one day, all of those questions will be answered. Maybe some of those questions won't mean so much to me anymore when I get there. But all of my questions will be answered, just like all of hers were. And on the day that we make it to that place and go to Jerusalem, our questions will be unequivocally and marvelously answered. I think it'll be, you know, for me, a lot like the blind man in John chapter 9. And the people questioned him about who did this for you. He said, and they said, admit that he's a sinner. He said, I don't know if he's a sinner or not. But one thing I know, that though I was blind, yet now I see. There are things we don't know in this life. There are questions that we have. But when we come to the answers that we need, it's enough. We sing in our songbooks, Farther Along, I think is the title of the song. And that song says, Farther Along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, we'll understand why. Cheer up, my brother. Live in the sunshine. We'll understand it all by and by. And one day, all of those questions that we have, we're going to have answers to. And that's going to be wonderful. When this queen came to Jerusalem, she found amazing riches. Look at 1 Kings chapter 10. The amount of things that we see here and what she encountered when she went there was just too much for her. It says in verse 4 that when the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters, and their apparel, his cupbearers, and his entryway by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. I love that statement. This was just overwhelming. As she experienced and saw this, it took her breath away. She had no more spirit breath in her as she saw all of this and was impressed by all of this. And this just kind of paints a picture for us of opulence beyond belief. She had never seen anything like this. And this was somebody that was no pauper. She came with all kinds of riches that she brought with her. But what she saw in Jerusalem was unparalleled to anything she had ever seen before. Verse 14 through verse 27 talk about the revenue of Solomon and all of the things that were coming into his kingdom. All of the gold by weight and the different spices and things that would be brought to him. And we even see in verse 27 that the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones. Just kick those out of the way as you go down the street. It's an amazing thought to think about the wealth that must have been there at that time. And I think for us, ultimately, heaven will put things in perspective for us. And we'll start to understand a little bit better when we get there. When we get to Jerusalem, all of this stuff that we put so much stock in won't mean much to us anymore. I told somebody the other day that it's somewhat sobering to think about the fact that I've worked for 30 years and all that little that I have amassed really amounts to some code in a string of numbers called Bitcoin. Everything that I've worked so hard for and put so much effort to try to obtain and do, just a few numbers in a string. And I think when we get to heaven, we'll start to understand that a little bit better. What we thought were riches and what we thought was impressive will be reassessed and reappraised when we see all of that that's there. All of this will just seem so relatively insignificant to us. And that's why Paul says in Colossians 3 and verse 1, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. There are such beautiful places here. The Rocky Mountains are gorgeous. The Northern Lights, the waterfalls of Iceland. And I've been to some of these places. You've been to different places. Beautiful places. But they just don't begin to compare and will just be mere trifles compared to what God has prepared for us. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9 says, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those that love Him. All of the pearly gates and the golden streets and the way that we conceive of that place is just a help to us to in some way try to imagine it. All of the things that we've been told. But that really is only representative. I read a statistic about Warren Buffett in 2020 that was rather astounding to me. And the person that was writing this said that if Warren Buffett was walking down the street and he saw a $100 bill on the ground, it would not be worth his time to pick it up. The amount of wealth that some people have is rather inconceivable. He made $417 a second in 2020. And so that second to pick up that $100 bill off the ground just would not be worth it to you. That's astounding. But all of that, even thinking in that way, is not to be compared with what we will encounter in the city of Jerusalem. And here this queen with 120 talents and more spices than had ever come into the city, verse 10, the most spices that had ever come into Jerusalem and never again, he says, came into the city, the amount that the Queen of Sheba brought, just a drop in the bucket. It's pretty astounding to think about it in that way. She is blown away. The most wealthy person, blown away by what she sees. Look at verses 5 and 6 as well. As we think about when this queen came to Jerusalem, she experienced heightened emotions. Chapter 10 and verse 5, again, as we see the things that she saw, there was no more spirit in her. Completely overwhelmed. Completely taken aback by what she saw. Look at Revelation in connection with that in chapter 1 and verse 17. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 17, when John was seeing the things that were revealed to him by the Lord God. He, just like her, as he has shown the things of God, shown the Lord, shown the city a little bit later as we read in Revelation 21. In Revelation 1 and verse 17, it says that when I saw him, that is the one like the Son of Man that's talked about before, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. But he laid his right hand on me, saying to me, "Do not be afraid, for I am the first and the last. I am he who lives and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. I have the keys of Hades and of death." And so just as she experienced this emotion as she came into the city, we will experience the same. Look at verse 7. Verse 7, back in 1 Kings chapter 10. When she saw this with her own eyes for the first time, and she experienced what she experienced, she recognized that this was too much. She couldn't conceive of this. 1 Kings chapter 10 and verse 7. She says, "However, I did not believe the words." There are some things we read about that are hard to believe about Jerusalem. And she says, "I didn't believe some of the things that I had heard. But when I came, until I came and saw with my own eyes, and indeed the half was not told me, your wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame of which I heard." The half was not told. All of what brought her that distance was just all the things that people bragged about and the things she said, "That can't be true. I've got to see this with my own eyes." And she comes and she sees it and she says, that wasn't the half of it. That wasn't even the half of what I'm seeing here. And heaven will be like that all of our conceptions and emotions concerning it one day will be shattered in all of the best ways. And we'll say, that Revelation 21 passage, that wasn't the half of it. It's a great thing to think about. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 9 says, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those that love Him." Notice one other thing here, if you're in 1 Kings chapter 10. Drop down to verse 8, because as she is observing all of this, what she observes are some people. And that the people that were in the presence of God and connected with God via Solomon were happy people. And she says, "Happy are your men and happy are those your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom." She talks about their happiness. Imagine that. Imagine ours in Jerusalem. There's that song that is so very popular, that by Mercy Me, and I love that song, and just the thought of what will we do? What are we going to do when we get to heaven? How will that be for us? Surely the emotions of the Queen of Sheba are much like the ones that we will have, just on a completely different scale. And that song says, "I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine, surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel." It's worth the trip, folks. Jerusalem is. And it seems so long sometimes. It seems so difficult sometimes. And we see people suffering along the way as the retinue goes toward Jerusalem. And she confirmed, I think, in all of that, the value of the journey. Because this was not easy. Sheba was 1,400 miles away from Jerusalem. The typical camel, and it talks about camels and all that she brought, typical camel travels between 20 and 40 miles a day, depending on the size of the caravan that it's in. If you do the math, coming from that area of Sheba, which is typically conceived to be Ethiopia or Yemen, which is on the same parallel line, there are some references in extra-biblical works of Ethiopia to Sheba. So that's where we might gain some information there as to that location. But if that indeed is the location, and most everybody believes that it is,
That is a 50 to 70 mile trip. I spent an hour on a camel in the Negev desert, and that was way too long for me. 10 hours a day for 50 to 70 days. Is that really worth it, that trip? Go that far. All that heat, all that sand, difficult circumstances. But it's worth the journey. And I tell you, folks, don't give up on Jerusalem. Follow the signs to Jerusalem and stay on that path because it's worth it. Every mile is worth it and the suffering that's involved is worth it. And when Jerusalem comes into view and you pass through those gates, you'll say, the half of it has not even been told to me. It's a great picture that we have in our mind of when this queen came to Jerusalem. And everything that she saw. And I just want to encourage us that for us, I believe that one day we will say all the sacrifices that we made will be just minor in terms of our thinking. She brought great wealth with her. And you can read about all that she gave to Solomon, 120 talents and all of these spices and so forth. But at the end of this, and I think that what I want to say to you is that no matter what you bring to the Lord, He will always give you more. And no matter the sacrifices and no matter the cost, and sometimes it's costly, no matter the effort that we make and how far the journey is and what it takes for us, the value is there. Notice verse 13, God will always give you more. It's impossible that He cannot. We're unprofitable servants. And verse 13 says, now King Solomon gave the queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, besides what Solomon had given her according to the royal generosity. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. Let me say to you folks that the king will always give you more. And no matter how much that you have given and will give, and like Paul said, to spend and be spent, and I'm ready to do that, and I'm going to give to the Lord to the very end, even to the point of death, that I believe He will always give you more. The riches of what He has to offer, everything that we desire, verse 13, besides the royal generosity, just whatever we have. It's a beautiful thought. We've been, and let's turn to Romans chapter 8 and verse 18 before we go here. Romans chapter 8 and verse 18. For us, heaven will make all the sacrifices seem so minor. When we put them on the scale, they're just not to be compared. Romans 8 and verse 18 says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Our theme this year is, Lord, help me. Lord, help me. And this morning we just want to circle this one of those topics. Lord, help me get to heaven. Help me, Lord, to get to Jerusalem. Help me to get to that city, that Jerusalem above. And we're all in need of the Lord's help. And folks, that doesn't happen unilaterally. And it's not going to happen as a result of what we do. But it will be because He interjects into our lives. And we desire Him. And He's with us. It's much like Philippians chapter 2 and verses 12 through 13. That we're to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure. So we need the Lord's help to get there. We need Him to be with us in that effort. I wrote down just a few things that I know I need. That the Lord help me to get to heaven. Lord, help me to employ the assistance of faithful people. I need You. I need other people that have like precious faith. Lord, help me to make choices for You and not for myself. to not get caught up in the materialism of this world. Lord, help me in that. Lord, help me to rise above a culture of self-consumption. Everybody is just about themselves. Help me to get above that. Help me, Lord, to learn to be content in whatever state that I am in. Lord, help me to value the communication that I can have with You. Don't let me take prayer for granted. Don't let me take that ability to communicate with God for granted. Lord, help me to frame each day around Your will for me, to start and end with Him. To realize that the godly will suffer persecution. That's what the Scriptures say. To not base my faith on everything going right when it all falls apart. In this world, the Lord is still there. And then, Lord, help me to understand that people will disappoint and fail, but You never will. Lord, help me to get to heaven. Help me to get to Jerusalem. Look, if you will, at Isaiah 66 and verse 1. We'll bring the lesson to a close. In Isaiah 66 and verse 1. We put so much importance in the things of this world, and it's hard not to. It's hard not to, for our vision, not to be affected sometimes, but we need to understand what Isaiah says in chapter 66 and verse 1. Thus says the Lord, heaven is my throne, and earth is my footstool. Where is the house that You will build me, and where is the place of my rest? Folks, we're living on the footstool. And if you think this is beautiful, and if you think there are great things here, just wait till you get to the throne room of God. Wait till you get there. This is just the footstool, the place that God rests His feet. The dust of this earth. I've said it before, and I just love the thought of mentioning you. You know, you were made for heaven. You were not made for hell. Hell is a place reserved for the devil and his angels. It's not made for us. We're not meant to go there. And heaven is such a wonderful thought. And one day eternity will swallow up time, and all the tears of this life in a moment will be dissolved. Don't you want to go there? Don't you want to go to that place? The world is just a shadowy representation of the next. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 18 says, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Love what C.S. Lewis said. He said, aim at heaven and you will get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you will get neither. Help us, Lord, to put our focus there in heaven above. Thank You for listening this morning. Maybe there's somebody here this morning that needs to be obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ, that wants to go to Jerusalem and to make that journey. And if there's any way that we can help you in that journey this morning, we pray that you might take advantage of this day. It's an opportunity that we have. And if we can help you in some way, won't you please come? I'll stand.